You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Quincy Tessavernay. She and I share an affinity for colorful eyewear. You're only going to see that if you watch this on YouTube or you catch a clip on social media. But anyway, Quincy shares a story of ending her marriage after 16 years. So I'm lucky enough that I get to talk to many people about relationship changes on this show. It makes sense because in many ways, shifting your marital relationship is one of the biggest shifts an adult can make in their life. It has a big impact on what happens next. The reason for Quincy's relationship change, the reason for her divorce, is that she came out of the closet. So we talk about all the things that led up to that decision for Quincy. We talk about what happened right away in her life, and we talk about what life looks like now. I think you're going to love this conversation, so let's get to it. Quincy Tessavernay, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat today?
I'm so ready. I've been looking forward to this for a couple of weeks now.
Awesome. I start all of my conversations with my guests with the same question. What part of the world do you call home these days?
Los Angeles.
Love it. Love it. One of my favorite cities. What is your favorite way to transition from busy time to downtime, Quincy?
Putting on my shoes and walking.
All right.
I will just aimlessly leave the house and go in some different direction, or maybe even the same direction because someone's remodeling their house or something that I want to see progress on or whatever. But walking, and sometimes I listen to podcasts I'm like trying to catch up on, but most of the time I just listen to my breath and feeling my feet on the pavement and feeling the wind on my face. It just absolutely centers me, grounds me, makes me feel healthy. Makes me feel free because no one knows I just left the house, you know, because usually it's when I'm recording and writing and doing all these things at home alone anyway, but it's sort of that escapism, you know?
No,
so
absolutely. There's a huge amount of research about the whole walking and running and being outside without the interruption of other things and the impact that it has. I love it. I can geek out on that for a long time, but that's not what we're here to talk about. And we're not
Me
here to
too.
talk about that. So what we're here to talk about today is your decision to come out with your sexuality after being married for 16 years and how that decision changed your life. Are you ready to talk with me about this?
I am. I'm so ready.
Let's do it. So I want to like back the conversation up way up in time and talk to you about what life was like way, way, way before that, because I think that's just part of the story, who you are and how you became you and evolved as you. So was the 16-year marriage your first marriage just before had you been married before that?
No.
Okay. So that was your first marriage. How old were you when you got married that first time?
21.
21. So a perfectly acceptable, reasonable age to get married. And
but
then
back it, then, yes.
Yes. I think probably some people, I mean, really, depending on what's going on in your life, it's also, I mean, there's no right or wrong age, but I think that even now, if you're 21, it's like hard to argue with a 21-year-old about it. You might be like, but still no actual reason to like impede the, I mean, I think it's young. But I wouldn't, if I had a 21, I do have a 21-year-old, and if she came and said I'd get married, I would be like, all right, I have thoughts, but I kind of got to keep them to myself. So there we go. All right. So, but backing up even further, when you were younger, like a kid and a teenager, what awareness did you have at all or any of the different choices or options with sexuality and attraction?
I didn't know that there was any option. I didn't know there was any other word besides hearing my dad use the slur of, you know, that gay pussy or something like that, you know, like, or that fairy. And so obviously it was tainted with not good terms, not feel good feelings, you know, not that I could have like sort of a loving relationship with somebody that was of my same sex. But because my dad only did that to men, I didn't even know that women could have that option because he never said that to any woman that I know of. But once I think about sixth grade is when I really started noticing that there were friends of mine that were going to be gay. Even though I didn't know the word gay, I knew that they were tomboys and they were gay and all these things. And sure enough, I was right, even at this very young age. But I didn't know that it was something that I would be able to have the possibility of living my life that way. And realizing that my friendships with girls were much more nuanced in sort of jealousy and attraction and infatuation rather than them just being like a great new friend, you know, because obviously I know the difference between it now. But at the time, I had lots of friends that I didn't have those feelings towards. But the ones I did have that feeling towards, I'm like, wow, that must mean I want her to be my best friend. And back it up, that's not what it meant. It meant that I actually had a real live crush on her. And it was fun, you know, it was a fun way for me to get to know people. And I tend to sort of do that now too. Not, you know, we have like crushes on people that have those really incredible lives or careers or stories that you tell, you know, and it's like a fleeting thing, right? Like I really want to get to know them more, but it's like, you know, kind of, it's like a bubble and it just goes, you know. But I even use that same energy now to get to know people because it's a very magnetic thing for me and it's very real and it's not flirting. It's just like this, oh my gosh, I need to know more about you. So as I became more infatuated with my friends, none of my actual close friends were gay, just my surrounding friends. And the ones that I had like deep crushes on, we had some experimentation together, which was fantastic because I felt like it was a very safe way as a girl to be able to experiment and feel your body and feel things that felt good without having to have that experience with a boy that could potentially, you know, impregnate you or, you know, like leave you after that, basically, you know, just not want to be your friend. Whereas my friends as girls, it also gave them that opportunity to be aware that they weren't necessarily attracted to women, but they also learned to make themselves feel good and strong and all these sorts of things. So it was a bonding. But I don't
Yeah.
know. And I've never like divulged anyone's name or anything like that. So no
And
one
I would
knows who these
never
people
ask you
are.
to. Oh my gosh. All right. So the thing that I was curious about, because it's just part of the story, is, you know, it's different for every person who goes through this. Some people will tell you, you know, there was never a moment at 4 years old. It was something that was they knew. And other people experience an awakening or a realization of a part of them much later in life. And that's what I was curious about as part of your story. So you had crushes, which, you know, can be friendship crushes. They can be momentary infatuation. People can just be so magnetic that there can be nothing behind it. But, you know, and then that time of adolescence and curiosity and coming of age, it's a confusing part of life. I just gotta say. It's a confusing part of life. When within your like teenage years in the community that you were in, it sounds like there was openness and a space to experiment and to have this as a part of your life. Did it feel safe to experiment with your friends, not with your father, but was it accepted that there were gay relationships within your friend group?
There wasn't gay relationships in my friend group, unfortunately. And
Okay.
even the girls that I knew that were eventually gay, which was funny, I never pinpointed the guys that I went to school with that eventually were gay, but I definitely pinpointed the girls. And like at our subsequent class reunions, they were like, "How did you know I was gay? Why didn't you tell me? My life would have been so much better." And I was like, "Well, I didn't know you were gay."
Yeah.
Like it became, you know, this conversation. But so there wasn't relationships that I saw because this was the 80s, you know, like
That's yeah. That's
HIV was rampant. So it wasn't something that you wanted to flaunt because even though we didn't know what HIV and AIDS was at the time, like we do now, it just was not a place that you really wanted to come from if you could, right? So with my friends, all of those formative things happened before we hit high school. So by the time about starting of 8th grade, people were pretty aware that we probably shouldn't be doing these kinds of things anymore. And it was fine, crushing for me, but I lived through it. And then I had experimenting with boys, and it was just, it never had that same effect, you know, not the heart flutters, not the tummy flutters.
Yeah. So one of the things that I think is a difference between the 80s and the 2025s and future is that it is so much more forward in conversation that hopefully people who are coming of age have access to places where they're actually having this conversation about who are you attracted to. Whereas in the 80s, it was assumed that everybody was wired the same way. And if you weren't, it was harder to, I think, to find a place that was safe to talk about it. And I think that that's the reason that I was curious about your experience. All right, so you are then in a spot where you are engaging in dating and relationships with boys. When you married your first husband at 21, where were you at that time in your awareness of your own attraction and sexuality in that relationship? And like, was there like a and was there a conversation with him?
So the conversation was when we first met, we were working together. He had just graduated from college. I had just graduated from high school, and I knew that I wasn't right away going into any sort of four-year university path. That just wasn't for me at that time, mostly because I didn't want to take care of other people because I tend to be an empathic nurturer. And I knew myself very well that if I ended up moving into a dorm with people that were drinking and losing control and couldn't take care of themselves, that that responsibility would fall on me. And I did not want that. So I found a job in the mountains where I lived there for 5 days a week with and taking care of cabin kids, you know, campers.
Okay.
But I was my boss. Like, I mean, we had bosses, but in the cabin, I was the boss and they were kids and I was, you know, assisting them and being their big sister and things like that. But all weekend, the people that I worked with, we'd take off and go to Catalina and go to the desert and hike and, you know, do all these things. So it was very independent. And because we were working and there was no, absolutely no alcohol or drugs or anything like that around us, I didn't have to worry that I was going to have to take care of these people, you know, that were my coworkers. So as far as meeting him very early on, I told him, I said, you know, since I've been 10, I've basically been feeling a lot of strong feelings for women and have, you know, sexual encounters with them, et cetera. I had a crush on one of our coworkers and I told him about it and things like that. So we became best friends and
Okay.
both wanted to get married and have kids. Like, we just knew that that's what we wanted to do. And why not do it with your best friend? So he knew all along that I had these feelings. And I would tell him, you know, like I would say, you know, which of our friends would you want me to hook up with? Or should, you know, do I have a crush on? And I would tell him the truth and we would talk about it. It was very open and freeing. And, you know, we had two beautiful children and a beautiful marriage. But then it got to the point where I can't do this anymore as a straight married person. I need to like let down all of those shields and guards and go back to where I know my life can go now. And I thought it was going to be easier than it was. And it was actually really hard because I knew I was running towards what I wanted the most in the world, but I was knew that I was going to be leaving behind my best friend. And he didn't beg me, but he said, "Can't we just do this and you get to live your life and I will still be your partner?" And I said, "We can't, unfortunately, because that's not the example I want to set for our kids. And I don't think it's fair to you for me to be getting everything I want and you're not getting what you need from me anymore." Because I, you know, the last 2 years of the marriage, even, you know, having intimate relations with him was difficult for me. It was
Okay.
uncomfortable. Yeah.
So, all right. So I have questions.
Yes.
All right. And if I veer too close to personal information, you
Yeah.
tell me to buzz off. All right. So, you guys, while you were married, you had, even though you were open about your attraction to other women, you had a monogamous, heteronormative partnership.
Yes.
And were you generally happy? Did you find it fulfilling in most major ways?
Absolutely, because he was my best friend, right?
Okay.
So I was getting those needs met as far as like friends go and that sort of thing. And I had tons of friends that were women, and I was allowed to like go away for the weekend with them and all these things. And nothing, like I said, very monogamous. I never cheated on him or anything. But I started to sort of emotionally cheat on him. And that's when
Okay.
I definitely realized I have to run towards that. And so one day we were out and he was buying a gift for his mom. All of our birthdays are in October. His mom, his sister, his stepsister, his grandma, me. I don't know. There's probably one or two other people, you know, that had their birthdays in
It's a
October.
lot of Libra and Scorpio energy in your house.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm a double Scorpio. So
Me
that makes
too.
it even worse.
Me too, which means that we can be very good friends, but in a very small quarters because we would be like too, like it would be crazy.
So he said, "Can you meet me at this one jewelry store?" And I said, "Yeah, sure, I'll come and meet you." So I drive down and I meet him, and he left work at lunchtime to come and meet me there. And he takes me into the store, and he introduces me to the saleswoman, and he says, "This is Quincy, my wife. Can you show her what I picked out?" And she says, "Yeah, sure." And she brings out these beautiful, stunning diamond earrings. And I go, "Oh my gosh, those are so beautiful. Are you getting those for your mom for her birthday?" And he goes, "No, they're for you." And I was already like millimeters away of saying, "We have to talk. I can't do
Yeah.
this anymore." And I look at him and I look at her and I burst into tears. And I go out and I sit on this bench in front of the store. And a few minutes later, he comes out and he sits down. And he goes, "I know you're getting ready to tell me that you want to break up because you're gay." And I just went, "Ah, oh, thank God. I've been wanting to tell you because it's just getting on me." And I go, "But how did you know?" And he's like, "I was following you on your computer." And I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, how did that make you feel?" And he was like, "I knew, obviously, because I've known this whole time, but I just thought that we could keep doing what we're doing and that I could give you what you needed." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, you can't." And we literally went into a restaurant and drank some martinis, and he did not go back to work that day. And we just chatted and laughed. And I mean, it still got hard after that, but the initial let go of it and the prospect that we could still remain friends even to this very day was so promising, right? Because you don't want and you don't intend to break someone's heart, right? Especially when you go in openly telling them, like, "This is what I really want." And then, as you know, everything keeps progressing that, yes, you can have this. And then you finally do it, you're still leaving behind a lot of things.
So yeah, so I have one other question that I want to clarify. It sounded when you first told me this just a few seconds ago, like that at that one point he even offered to maybe open the relationship so that you guys would, is that, so I'm understanding. So he offered that you guys could stay married, maintain the marital contract, and would that have included the forward facing part of you guys would have appeared married to all of your friends and things like that, or?
No, that part wouldn't have been there, but he just still wanted to be like in my daily life, you
Okay.
know? Yeah.
All
Like,
right.
you know, continue raising our kids in the same house together and things
All
like that.
right.
So.
All right. Yeah. It's, I mean, because here's the thing, right? Like, even when decisions that we make are putting us in alignment with our true self and what we want, they come with an expense, they come with a price. Like, so when you choose one thing, not, it doesn't always mean you get all of the things on the menu. Sometimes you have to say, I'm going to get pie, and that means I can't have ice cream. And so you were saying, you were like, you know, I'm going to make this choice, but I'm not going to play both sides of the field. Why was that important to you to be, you said earlier that it was like you didn't want that to be the example you were showing the kids.
Well, I didn't want the kids to because they were going to be uncomfortable, right? Now
Okay.
your mom obviously still loves, cares for, and adores your father because he's your father. But she also is now attracted to women, and to have a different, and even though my kids were open about it and relatively accepting, I mean, it was still very hard for them. You can imagine what it might be like to suddenly see your mom with women, right? And especially in the early days, because I was dating lots of different people and all these things, and I just didn't want me to be getting dressed and leaving the house and coming back. And that stigma, I mean, they were teenagers, so they knew, you know, what potential dates could lead to and things like that. And that just felt uncomfortable to me. Not that I a prude, because God forbid, you know, I'm far
Right.
from prudish, but I at least wanted to maintain this separation between privacy and family life. And it worked out really well because we ended up buying another house to live in. So our kids stayed in our house, but we had like a bachelor and bachelorette pad. And
Okay, very modern
so
version of nesting. I love
it
it.
was
Okay.
extremely modern. So we had a walk-in closet at that sort of bachelor and bachelorette pad, and half the side was his and half the side was mine. And I stayed there for 2 weeks and he stayed there for 2 weeks. So we had 2 weeks on and off with the kids while our kids stayed at their same school, did all of their same things in their same bedrooms, and the same thing would happen. We shared our bedroom at our house and, vice versa. So it worked out very, very well for us.
So
And
I
then
have a question
eventually,
about that. I have a question about that. So nesting, for everybody who's listening, if you just in case you don't know, is the idea that when you split up a relationship when there are kids are involved, the kids stay in the house and the parents move around instead of the parents dividing and living in two houses and the kids shuttling back and forth. My question is, which is just for conversation, how long were you guys able to maintain that? Because the longest I've ever known anybody to be able to do the nesting thing is a year.
It was about, let's see, 3 or 4 years.
Good job.
Yeah.
Wow.
But in the meantime, I moved to Hawaii also. So I ended up doing my 2 weeks in Hawaii. We still kept that place because then when I would come back for my 2 weeks, he still went to our mutual bachelor
Okay.
and bachelorette
Because,
pad.
yeah, the family I know that did it for a year, at about a year, they started the dating partner started showing up at the shared house, and they were just like, no, this is like it
No.
doesn't.
Well, we knew, you mean at the shared house where the children were?
Well, it was like
Oh,
a it was
no.
like a
We didn't
crossover. It
do
was
that.
like it was like it was like no longer. It was like it was the relationship changing became like sort of crystallized. I don't remember the details, but about a year it just fell apart, and they're like, no, everybody needs their own houses. No more sharing.
Oh, wow.
So
Yeah. No, that didn't happen for quite some time because then after I was more permanently in Hawaii, we sold our house where the kids were. One of the kids moved with me to Hawaii. The other one stayed in San Diego with him in our what was our shared bachelor and bachelorette pad became their
came
house.
their house. Okay.
So,
All right.
yeah. So we just kind of kept, we still worked keeping basically the same things, just, in a different way, if you will.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So that's very civil and very good. You guys, I mentioned that you guys stayed close friends, which is amazing. What, thinking about the impact and the price of this decision on your life, what was the impact on your daily life and your family? Like,
Gosh.
what did your family and friends have to say as it was coming out? Like that kind of thing.
That was the worst part was the family and friends. So I was very, very, very involved in my kids' school in the community that we lived in. And so we had tons and tons of couple friends that had kids that were around our kids' age. And when we broke up, all of the friends dropped us.
Oh my God. Both of you,
Like,
everybody.
yes,
Okay.
dropped us, except for one set of friends that are still my best friends to this day. But they couldn't deal with it. And some of it was, and I know this, was the wives were uncomfortable because they thought that I wasn't really gay, that maybe their husbands would try to come after me or something like that. I don't know why, which is the dumbest thing ever. And two, I think some of them were afraid of hanging around with a gay person, literally. And so it was very lonely at first. It was suddenly I had all of these straight friends that appeared to be allies to the LGBT community to basically only having gay friends, which was fantastic because I was very loved and accepted, even though I had just gotten out of a marriage, even though I had kids and lived this super straight life for a long time. I was very loved and accepted. And I mean, so loved that on Mother's Day, they would take me out and make sure I was celebrated Mother's Day. Like, so many things about myself they loved and adored, which I think is how we should treat everybody. But my parents was probably the biggest shocker. I come from a family that, when I was growing up, was very, very large, very large. My grandparents on my dad's side came from Oklahoma and Texas, and they came from families of like 11, 12, 13 kids each. So I had millions of cousins. Then on my mom's side, we're Native Americans and everyone lives here in California. So, again, millions of cousins and things like this that a lot of them have passed away since due to, Native Americans not being very healthy and lifestyle choices and violence and things like this. But so I thought coming out, because I went to high school, graduated, got married, had children after I got married, went to college, graduated, got into, graduate school, that I did all of these things in the most perfect and normal American way, that me just coming out and getting divorced meant like, oh, that's nothing. Like, so and so was in prison and so and so shot so and so, and so and so's had three kids with three different dads. This was the most horrific thing that could ever happen to my parents and to my family. Not
I'm
all of them,
sorry.
but to a lot of them. It was devastating. I was like, but I'm still the same person. No,
Right.
you're not. They wanted to take my kids away from me. They wanted me to be committed. And this is in the 2000s,
Oh my goodness.
early
I was
2000s.
curious. It was bouncing around in my head. I was like, I wonder what year that was.
Yes,
I'm
this is the
sorry that
early
happened to you.
2000s. Yeah, it was devastating. I mean, I could not figure out why they couldn't wrap their brain around it. I'm like, but I did everything that I was supposed to do. Why is this so horrible? And it is still a point of contention sometimes, even now. They never ask me, am I dating someone new? Or, I mean, when I am in relationships, they do ask and they get to meet the people and what have you, but it's uncomfortable for me because I know they don't approve of it. They're very Christian, so they tell me, we feel so awful, you're going to hell. And, what do you do? Just
I don't,
what
if
do
I
you do?
had a good way to end that conversation, I would totally, I would totally share it with you, but I don't. It is a really strange conversation when somebody's faith beliefs include that they're pretty sure that you're gonna, spend your future in eternal damnation, and then they, sh you know, the thought is fine, but then they share it with you. I'm still not sure how to respond to it. It's like, oh, and
Yeah.
thanks for your concern. I don't know,
Yeah, I know. But
but.
and what I want to tell them now is, well, all of your granddaughters don't believe in the same gods or religion that you do. So are we all going to hell and you two are the only ones that aren't? But I don't say it. I just kind of, okay.
So that sounds like it's a really actually big price to pay. And I think that one of the things that's really interesting is that it was unexpected, right? Like we want our families to be, and in a perfect world, they are a place where they see us as we see ourselves, they love us and listen to us, as we want to be seen. And yet that's hard to do sometimes. It's really hard for people to do, and families are complicated. There's no simple family out there. So you talked a little bit about the warm reception you got with your new group after you split, but let's talk about the support you had while you were going through this change, right? So you're a 16-year marriage where you've got kids, that's a lot of enmeshment between two people. Like everything is mixed up. Finance, friends group, living, all of those things. You shared all of these things. As you go through this, who was around you supporting you as you guys made these changes?
For me, it was my best friend that was the only basically heterosexual couple that stayed with me. One of my cousins stayed pretty closely involved with me, thank gosh. And my new girlfriend and our friends, my chosen family were the ones that accepted me. And, my kids still loved me and adored me. And, we hung out and they met all of these people and just they loved it. My son had a particularly harder time with it because for him, he said people were making fun of him because his mom was doing the same thing with girls that he was doing and, things like that. So it was that part was very hard on him.
But there's no teenager that wants to be involved in their parents' love life,
No,
like
not that.
regardless of what's going on. Like they're in the process of defining themselves. And so, they want, like a teenager's mind, I think they want you to be a non-issue. Like, please, keep the house going and don't embarrass me, and don't just be a very. They don't really, they want parents that don't actually exist, and except for to pay the bills and drive them places.
For
So that would be so, but they, now you guys have a close relationship.
My son actually passed away in 2009,
Oh, I'm
and
sorry.
that is okay. That is what happens sometimes. And my daughter, yes, it's that my sexuality hasn't changed anything at all for her. Like, she's very loving towards, people that I've dated and accepting and all those kinds of things. So, yeah, it's very good. She's married now and she has her own two kids. So she has her life too,
Yeah, which is
Good.
I think that's the pattern. One of the things is like I'm not an expert on these things, but I think about it. Like, I mean, I just did not think about my parents' life at all when I was a teenager. You know, I was just totally involved in me, and except for when I needed them, right? Come and get me, help me do this thing. Otherwise, they could have been flying to the moon, and I was not paying any attention
Really,
at
really. Because I had
all.
the opposite experience. I was a latchkey kid, and I have no idea where my brother was, like most of the time. And he's only 17 months younger than I am. And I had this discussion with my mom a few months ago. I'm like, where was he all this time? I was by myself at the house, making my snack, doing my chores, supposed to be doing my homework, and I could feel for my mom how stressful it was. She was a working mom, which none of my other friends had working moms. They were all stay-at-home moms. My dad was a firefighter, so he was gone every other night, and then suddenly he was home for a few days. And most firefighters, even to this day, have another career because you can't live off of firefighters' income, especially today. And I could feel the difference when he was. When there was issues between them, definitely. It was very stressful for me. So I paid very close attention to their relationship, and I knew I never wanted my kids to have to live with that kind of tension around them. And I made sure of that. Even as my husband and I were breaking up, we kept it a secret from everyone for quite a few months while we did the uncoupling, if you will, went on a lot of walks, went to lunch more than we ever had, hung out more than we ever had to, slowly break apart and know that this friendship was going to be ending the way that we had had it. But yeah, it was rough to watch my mom go through not very good times with my dad.
Yeah, no, that would be so you had a different experience with it and you were very aware of your parents. So that probably impacted that. Well, this may go down in the books as the most agreeable and easygoing divorce that I've heard of in a long time.
It was. We didn't even have to have a lawyer. We literally just wrote everything out and presented it to the court, and we didn't take each other's anything. We didn't take retirements. We didn't take anything. We just split everything in half. We sold our house, split the profits, and it just was how it was, and because we didn't want it to be that way. Why should best friends who had a family together and grew this life together become complete jerks and just mean people to each other that you see, regardless of who's getting hurt and not getting hurt? Like, why does it have to end like that? So we have maintained that to this day. I just talked to him on the phone 2 days ago. We like to talk about our other daughter together and, just sort of, here's what I know, here's what like, how can we support her? How can we be there for her,
Which is fantastic because one of the things that never changes, even after divorce, you guys will always be her parents. You will
And now
always
we're
be her parents
grandparents together.
and
So,
grandparents, exactly. Yes, exactly. And so I think that's really beautiful. And also, to be honest, really lucky.
thank you.
Because I think that
We feel
many
very lucky.
people, yeah, many people would love to have that. But like you said, the process can be really hard for people. And I'm not an expert on that either. So, okay. So this was a lot of years ago, actually. And I think you shared with me that you've been married and divorced since then.
Yes. So.
Looking back now on that initial decision to come out of the closet, how would you say that it impacts your life, how you live it today?
Today, I don't feel like I'm missing anything. I feel like all of my dreams come true and continue to come true and get, built and shaped and redesigned as things, come along. I feel such a weight lifted off, which is very cliche, but it does feel like that, right? When you get that like aha moment, something lifts off of you. And when I leave the house and I know I can have attraction and want to date that person or take my girlfriend to dinner and, kiss her in public or whatever. And not, I don't do things so demonstratively that it's inappropriate, but I just know that that's me. Like that's always been me. And it feels like the whipped cream on that pie that you were talking about, it feels like the hot fudge on the sundae. It just has everything tastes good about it. There's no shame, there's no regret. It's just that life that I went through. I got these amazing children. I have an amazing co-grandparent and parent with that friend of mine. And it's beautiful. It's absolutely the most incredible life that I could have ever imagined for myself.
All right, I love that answer. All right, so then here's a question that in every interview, there's at least one question that I have on the list that I'm not sure if it's a good question, and I ask them anyway. Okay, so why is it significant or important to you to share this story of this shift in your identity and going public in your relationship? Why is that something that you feel is important to do?
It's important because while so many people are trying to shed labels, I think it's still important because it's so still not accepted in so many parts of this country and this world that to see people, regular, normal people, your neighbors, your friends, classmates, parents, things like this, the people to see that gay people are around you, lesbians are around you, trans people, bi people are around you that have just as normal lives as you do. We just love different people than you love. And how is there so much controversy around that every single day? And I want people to be proud to know me. I want people, and I've had people say, we really like you, but we like you because you're such a good person and you're such a good example to our kids about being a lesbian, about being a good mom, about being a good human, about volunteering at our school relentlessly, that you're really the person that we want our kids to know so that someone else doesn't try to brainwash them. And I said, oh my gosh, thank you. So I literally live by that. I'm someone's example for their kids, for themselves, for, I want to be there to mentor people. I want to be there to explain things to people. I'm happy to be an example, even when I do stupid things. Like, yeah, I'm going to do stupid things, but so what? I learn from my mistakes. I never make the same mistake twice.
And even if you did, this is this weird thing, right? Like, so wisdom comes from experience, right? But you can only get experience if you do stuff. And if you're going to do stuff, not all of it is going to go perfectly. And so it's that crazy thing that it's like people want everybody to learn and expand. But the only way to actually do that is to try stuff. And along the way, you're gonna make some mistakes and do some stupid stuff. So, I think that that's it's just a funny thing about aging. It's like there's all this pressure when we're younger to not make mistakes and do the right thing. And it's not always good advice because, it's like in order to figure things out, you do need to try. You don't know whether or not you like asparagus until you eat it. And then you can decide, right?
Exactly.
All right, so
Exactly.
that's very good. I think that one of the things interesting in 2025, social media has a bad rap. There's a lot of pushback against like the internet and being online and all of those things. One of the superpowers of the connectivity that we have today is the and podcasting and videos on YouTube is that for better or worse, when you are looking for representation, like is this possible? It has a broader reach. It has a broader reach. So you talked about in the 80s, you didn't have anybody in your community to look like. You didn't have anybody in your family. And so, and we know that, for women to believe that they can be astronauts, it's helpful to have an example of a woman who is an astronaut. There are people who are brave enough and driven enough to break out of those things, but not everybody. It's helpful. So I agree with you that that's one of the things that's great. And I commend you for being willing to put yourself out there because it's not always easy being, when you chose to come out and get divorced, that was in the public and you paid the price of then people knew. But you did. Your husband offered you the choice of like, let's stay married and you can just live like a secondary life. And you're like, no, not for me.
No. No,
Very good.
I can't hurt you like that. Like, I care about you too much to be so free-spirited that you're at home wondering and waiting for me to come back. And what if I don't come back tonight? I still want to have that same mutual respect that we have, between each other.
It is a really, really tough thing, the identity of a family and the pressure of the image of the family and the experience of the kids in the family up against the lives of the adults. It can be a really complicated thing in all different levels, for sure, and in a million different ways. All right, so in a second, we're going to do the final questions, but I want to give you a chance to tell people about a project that you're working on. You call it your latest creative project, Cocoon After Dark. Tell us all about that and how people can find you and that project.
So, yes, thank you so much. Cocoon After Dark is a podcast that we are launching September 3rd. So, I've been in recording and studying and learning everything, not everything, but as much as I can learn about podcasting and things like that and interviewing techniques over the past several months. And the reason I decided to start Cocoon After Dark is because for quite some time, people have been saying, you need to write a book. You need to write a book. You need to write a few books because I've had so many chapters in my life. I've been married to a straight man. I've been married to a gay woman. I've had kids. I've lost a child. I've lost grandparents. I've, had many, many experiences in my life. But through all of that, the relationships that I make with people are become very organic, like sitting next to someone on a plane. And by the time we get off the plane, they're like, oh my God, I feel like I've known you forever. So I have this ability to really be authentic with people and have them tell me things or be able to share things without being embarrassed, without thinking that people are going to hate me or not, because it doesn't really matter to me. I'm sharing a story for someone. Just like I'm being an example for someone. So my podcast is specifically for LGBTQ people. And I also want to bring in a lot of BIPOC people that are part of the LGBTQ community so that we can share stories about what we're doing. So the array of people that I've already interviewed or have on my calendar to interview over the next several months is phenomenal. It's everyone from professional surfers to leaders in LA that are working on LA 28 for the Olympics, to go-go dancers, to hairstylists, just so many different people, female bodybuilders, comedians, authors, and everyone is from the LGBTQ community in some way. And it is kind of like Call Her Daddy with a very LGBTQ twist because I want it to be really raw, but I want it to be from a Gen Xer's perspective, not and from a female Gen X perspective, not millennials, not Zs, not whatever, wherever they are in that sort of podcasting world, because there's a lot of people in LGBTQ podcasting that are under 40, but I'm pushing the late 50s by this point. So my perspective and the things that I want to ask and know about is different, right? And the stories I'm going to share are different because they come from decades and decades and decades of life experience. So we're on Instagram, and we also have a page that we'll have like our landing page. It's just not live yet because our RSS isn't up. I'm waiting until this weekend to get that and have everything in place. I just don't want anything to go haywire in between. But I am super excited to have guests come on. I have an application for people to apply. If they fit into this season's categories, then I'm happy to have them. If not, I'm pushing them to next season. So this season will run until New Year's Eve because we're launching every Wednesday. And then we'll start recording again in January, and it will come again out in mid-January through June. So we'll be season
That
two.
is spectacular. I love
Thank you.
that. All right. So that's
Thank
Cocoon After Dark. All of that will be up. And so there will be episodes available for people to listen when this episode goes live. So you guys can
Excellent.
find Quincy and Cocoon After Dark on all of the audio platforms. And we'll put some links in the show notes and it'll be in my newsletter. And so the easiest way to get information about the guests and what they're doing is always for people to be subscribed to the Imperfect Adulting email community, because then I just zap it to you in your email box. You can click on the links, you can read about the guests, all the fun things. Quincy, are you ready for my final fun questions?
Yes, I'm
All
super excited
right.
and so curious what you're going to
I know sometimes
say.
people get nervous about these, but they're not really very serious. Okay, so do you read books? And if so, or listen to books? And if so, is there a book that you love so much that you've read it or listened to it more than once?
I am such a varied reader, and I do listen to books on tape when I don't have time to sit down and read, but I don't reread books generally. I mean, I'm looking at my bookcase over here, and there isn't actually one that I've ever reread. Not that I don't want to, but I tend to read, obviously, because I'm an entrepreneur, books about, growth and business and things like that. But I'm a huge lover of historical fiction. I
Okay.
love historical fiction, and I love lesbian romance, of course, because it's my sort of muddy, when you talk, my other form of relaxation is lesbian smut, so.
It should be. As it should be. So I enjoy historical fiction, but I have to actually be careful because if it's something I can get, I don't like to be confused about what actually happened in history. Like if I read a book and it's fiction, I like, so there was some book that people said was a reworking of history. And it was in a book club I was in. And I was like, no, I cannot read that book because it's giving an alternate version of what actually happened. And I don't want to be confused. So, if I'm watching like the Gilded Age on TV, I'm like looking up like what actually happened kind of thing. So if it's total, it has to be off a little bit so that I can do that. Okay, so anyway, next question. If you had to choose, which do you prefer, watching a sunrise or a sunset?
Oh my gosh, definitely sunsets. I
Yeah.
love sunsets because I am not a night person. So as soon as that sun goes down, I don't do anything. It doesn't matter if it's 5 in the winter or 10 in the summer and I'm in Europe someplace. I do not function in the dark. I'm just not a nighttime person.
You're set
So
completely to the solar clock, and when the sun goes down, you're like, Quincy out.
yes, and I love that because I have no excuse. Like if you say you need to take a meeting with me or something, I'm like, gosh, I can't because I don't think when it's dark. I'm 100% solar powered. So when that goes down, I'm like, yeah, baby, I get to relax now. So,
100% solar powered. All right,
and I
that's
live on
super
the
funny.
West Coast,
Yeah,
so my sunset
I.
is spectacular.
Yes. No, that's very true. The Pacific sunsets are spectacular,
So
spectacular.
spectacular. And I lived in Hawaii on the west coast of Hawaii too when I lived there. Insane. Like people in Hawaii, they stop every day for sunset. Like you stop. It is a light, a way of being. It's similar, I think, to Scandinavians jumping in the sauna and the cold water. This is exactly the same. Like you like revere those sunsets.
Love it. Love it. All right. So imagine that you have a free day to fill, which you probably don't because you're launching this new project, but just imagine for a second.
Yes.
If I gave you the choice and you have to choose from one of the options, you don't get to fill it in with something else. You have to choose one even if
Okay.
you're unhappy. If the choices are going to an art museum, going to a music concert or a festival, or shopping at an outlet mall, what's your choice?
Definitely music. Music, music, music. I love to dance. I love to sing, even though I'm a terrible singer. I can hear the harmonies and I can harmonize sometimes, but music literally fuels my soul. Like, and live music more than anything because of the energy of the people, the energy of the artist. It's just the purest form of entertainment for me whatsoever. I mean, even when the kids sing at school, I'm the person that with tears in my eyes running down my face because it's so beautiful. It's just the most angelic, if you will, and not in a godly sense, but it's just so pure.
I
And
love it.
so it's definitely music.
I love it. That's it. Quincy Tesavarene, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
I had so much fun, Amy. Thank you very, very much. And thanks for letting me share my story in this way with these kinds of questions, because you know how different it is between you answering your own questions in your head versus what somebody else wants to know. So thank you. That was really nice.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.